Good morning, Central Oregon. My name is Don Pommier, and on behalf of City Club Board of Directors and Program Committee, we want to welcome you to our April Forum on Citizen Assemblies. We're really glad you're here, and boy, a day like today reminds us how blessed we are to live in Central Oregon, right? So gorgeous. Question, how many first-time City Club attendees do we have today? Raise your hand. All right, bunch of them. Well, we appreciate you being here, and we hope to see you again soon. Next, I'd like to recognize our Board of Directors and Program Committee. If you could please stand, be recognized. And I hope all of you have been able to catch some of the debates that have been held by City Club this week. I'd like to recognize our elected officials. I saw several of them here, and also people that are running for office. Would you please stand and be recognized? We sure appreciate your service and willingness to serve our communities as well. We'd like to make sure we give a special thanks to our sponsors. We have several platinum and gold sponsors, including, and many of them are here. If you're here, would you please stand and be recognized as well? ASL Wealth Management, City of Bend, COCC, the Desert Pine Group at Morgan Stanley, OSU Cascades, St. Charles, Central Oregon Association of Realtors, and Brooks Resources. These sponsors are vital to helping us support the mission of City Club and also make our events a little bit more affordable. If you're interested in sponsorships, please reach out to Kim, myself, or any of the other board members. We'd definitely like to encourage participation. Anybody that'd like to get more involved in City Club, please reach out to any of the program committee or the board members. How many of you have heard of citizen assemblies here? Raise your hand. All right, I guess that's great to see. A lot of people aren't familiar with it. It's very common, more common in Europe. There's a few places in Oregon and across the country that have been, promoting the idea of it, and we're excited to learn more about it. We have a panel of experts today that are gonna walk us through that are sitting up here at the front table. And I'd like to introduce our moderator for today. We're lucky to have Nicole Volkin. Do you want to come up, Nicole? Nicole is the editor of Source Weekly and has since 2016. It's Central Oregon's locally owned weekly newspaper, which has won dozens of statewide journalism awards under her leadership. Prior to that, Nicole worked as a news producer at KPTV in Portland, and also in Rapid City, South Dakota. You're a long way from home. Heading up an independent publication like The Source is a dream come true for her, combining her leadership skills, a passion for the community journalism, and a drive to tell underrepresented stories. Please give a warm welcome to Nicole as she introduces our panel.
Thank you, Don. I am so pleased to be here. I think this is going to be a fascinating topic, so I'm just so happy I get to moderate this panel. Today we're going to begin with some presentations on citizen assemblies at the international level, how this came to be a topic of discussion locally, and what's happening to implement them here. We'll then move to a panel with a series of questions to dig deeper into how a citizen assembly could function in Central Oregon, and we'll finish with an audience Q&A, so you'll have a chance to ask some questions. Our first two speakers today are Claudia Chalis and Josh Burgess. Claudia is the founder and CEO of Democracy Next, an international nonprofit research and action institute working to shift political and legislative power to people through empowered citizens' assemblies. She co-designed the world's first permanent citizens' assemblies in Paris. I'm gonna mess this one up. Oost-Belgien, I had to write that down, and Brussels on climate. She also co-directs a pop-up lab on tech-enhanced citizens' assemblies, a joint initiative of Democracy Next and the MIT Center for Constructive Communication. Josh Burgess is director of the Central Oregon Civic Action Project, working to empower broad civic engagement and deliberative dialogue in the region. He's a retired colonel and special operations pilot in the U.S. Air Force, and he's designed and implemented multilateral capacity building programs around the globe. More recently, he co-founded a nonprofit refugee resettlement organization to help resettle Afghan and Ukrainian newcomers to the U.S. Due to a heavy world travel schedule, Claudia's presentation today will be virtual. So let's hear from her.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I'm really sorry that I can't be there with you in person today. It would have been really, really nice to be back in Bend. I had the pleasure of meeting some of you in person when I was there in January, and hopefully I'll have another occasion soon, in not too much time. But in the meantime, thank you to technology. I am sending you this little video, and my colleague Josh Burgess, who's there in person, will pick up on kind of the more specific context for Bend. So what I've prepared here are just a few slides and a presentation to go through about the bigger picture, about the trends that are happening worldwide, about what we're calling Up Democracy Next, the next democratic paradigm, which really centers around citizens' assemblies. So in my presentation, I'll cover about who we are at Democracy Next, DemNext as we call ourselves for short, about citizens' assemblies, what are they, where have they been taking place, and two of our focus areas at DemNext in particular, one around pushing innovation in the field, and also around pushing for systemic change to be happening. So Democracy Next is an international research and action institute, and our mission is to shift who has power and how we take decisions in government, but also other organizations in our daily lives. So we've done some work with museums, we're in collaboration with cooperatives and conversation with universities, really trying to think through how we could be changing the governance and how we take decisions in all sorts of different kinds of organizations and institutions. The three core principles that are underpinning our work are sortition, meaning the random selection of decision makers, deliberation, which means collectively weighing shared evidence, and off the back of that, coming to shared decisions, and participation, because we believe that everybody should have the dignity and the agency to be involved in participating in democracy and in shaping decisions that are affecting their lives. The work that we're doing is really building on a wealth of evidence. So my colleague Yeba Chesmuentite and I were at the OECD beforehand, where I set up and I was leading this area of work around innovative citizen participation, and the two of us developed all of these resources that were published over the course of a few years before we launched DemNext. And what we're doing is continuing this tradition of being really an international knowledge hub on deliberative democracy and citizens' assemblies, creating resources and doing capacity building to enable more people in more places to have the skills and the knowledge to be able to be designing and implementing and running assemblies themselves. So before I go any further, I think I'll take some time to just define what am I talking about by a citizens assembly and what do I mean by this. Rather than just citing a definition, let me just share this through a couple of examples. So some of you may have heard about the Irish Citizens Assembly, which is one of the, I would say, probably the most high-profile examples that has inspired a lot of what we see happening in Europe, but also around the world, which dates back to 2012, actually, was the initial impetus for what has now been a series of assemblies in Ireland. The first ones took place around issues to do with constitutional changes on same-sex marriage, abortion, divorce, blasphemy, issues to do with climate change, and also Ireland's relationship with the EU. So it led to four constitutional referendums, all resulting in change on those issues like abortion and same-sex marriage. But since then, Ireland has done a whole series of different assemblies. The most recent one that took place just last year was on drug policy reform. But there's also been other assemblies at the city level that have taken place, like a very recent assembly in Copenhagen, which took place about a really big infrastructure around the creation of a new island just off the coast of Copenhagen called Lynetteholm. There's another interesting example that where we've been in touch with the folks in Bogota around their citizens assembly on city planning, which has actually been taking place as a series of assemblies around planning issues. But these are just a couple of examples to make this idea sound a little bit more concrete about what are citizens assemblies, because there's actually been over 700 of them around the world. And this is just off the back of the last OECD database update. And I'm sure there have been more since then. And all of these assemblies have a few things in common: that people are selected by sortition, that they have deliberated a minimum of one day, and all of them have all been initiated by public authorities. They've taken place at all levels of government with, as we see, cities leading the way. And they've really tackled a whole range of policy issues. So beyond the fact that there's been almost everything covered by an assembly at one point in time, there has nonetheless been a concentration of issues to do with the environment, climate change, strategic planning, urban planning, health and infrastructure. So the types of issues that don't necessarily have one clear yes or no answer, there's a certain complexity amongst them, and having a structured process that enables people to be with that complexity and to find common ground on what to do about the issues have been really helpful. So I've used this word a couple of times of sortition, and I think it's important just for me to spend a minute to describe, well, how does this actually work in practice for people to be randomly selected? So technically, this usually happens in two stages. So in a first instance, there's an invitation that gets sent out, often in the post, to a very large number of people, somewhere between 2,000 to 30,000, depending on the size of the place. And that invitation is a letter that's signed by the mayor or the minister or the president or prime minister, depending on the context, laying out what is the issue that's going to be tackled, how is this assembly going to work. It answers questions about, am I going to be paid? Yes, that childcare will be provided, that, you don't have to wear a suit to participate. All these sorts of things that help to break down the barriers to participation. And amongst everybody who says yes to this, there's then a second lottery, and there's a process which is technically called stratification. But all that means is that that final group is broadly representative of that community around certain criteria such as gender, age, geography, socioeconomic status. In a way, this is a political decision to decide by which criteria do we want this final group to be broadly representative of our community. And then once that group is constituted, they go through a process that has enough time to build trust for people to be with complexity and to strengthen people's agency. Often these take place over at least 4 to 5 days.
So this is a schema of a five-day process.
But in person quite often today, actually, we've seen many nice assemblies taking place over in 6, 8, 10. Some of you in person when I was there in January, and hopefully I'll have another occasion. One in France took place over 27 days around legislation on end-of-life issues. So these are longer processes. It's not about bringing people together for just one day. And before people even meet, there's a wider community engagement that happens with the inputs from that feeding into the evidence base of an assembly. There's an important phase of people really getting to know one another and identifying their shared values. The learning component is usually the longest. It's really important that there's a wide breadth and diversity of information that people learn about the subject matter. Deliberation and consensus building. So once people have learned a lot, have had a chance to request additional information if they need it, they work to build consensus around their shared recommendations. There's often some form of voting that happens on those. Usually the threshold is at least 75 to 80% consensus amongst the group for it to become a recommendation of the group. And those recommendations get delivered to the public authority at the end. One of the things that we're interested in at Democracy Next, though, is how we could be pushing the field to innovate in all these different phases of the assembly. So one of the things that we're doing right now is in collaboration with the MIT Center for Constructive Communication, is looking at tech-enhanced citizens assemblies. The parts that are highlighted in green are the aspects that we're already working on prototypes using the existing technology that the MIT team have developed to test out in an assembly context. And the ones that have the green kind of outlined around the edge is where we see a big potential to be developing new kinds of prototypes in the next phase of this work as well. And we think that the technology is not there to replace anything that happens in person, but can be used to enhance the in-person process by enabling a wider diversity of citizen perspectives to be included through a better community engagement and listening process, to help ease some of the burden of the deliberative process and improve its quality during that dynamic of what we call subdivide and synthesize. There's a, you know, going from small groups to large groups throughout this whole process, and for everything to be more transparent and accountable with a public archive that is grounded in the voice of what has taken place during this assembly. And all of these things enabling both greater trust and trustworthiness in the process, but also in other ways helping to scale the impact as well. And finally, the last bit of focus of the way we're thinking about things at DemNext is about really pushing for systemic change and not just one-off assemblies or better engagement processes, but how could we make these permanent? So I've been involved. Here are some pictures from some of the design phases of the Brussels Permanent Assembly on Climate. This is David van Reybroek, who's a really well-known writer, thinker, activist in Belgium, who's also been one of the big leaders in the field. There's some photos from the early design phases, and then photos right before we met with the president and all the ministers and the government to present the ideas after we've polished them into a nice presentation. But we've done some work there. Also in the city of Paris, this is the permanent Paris Citizens Assembly that has been united. And we've been thinking about how to bring this idea of permanence or institutionalization, meaning how do we make this a normal way in which certain types of decisions get taken, also around city planning decisions at the city level. So this past year, we convened an international task force on democratizing city planning, which involved 15 people from 15 different countries. And as you can see here, it's really a mix of architects, developers, investors, governance experts, professors, civil society organizations, designers. We really wanted to bring this diversity of views to the table thinking about this. So after a bunch of virtual meetings, we actually gathered in person for a three-day deliberation ourselves. And without going into all the details of the proposals, we came up with a set of proposals about six ways to democratize city planning that have three different types of assemblies at their heart. So ad hoc assemblies around different kinds of maybe infrastructure issues, but thinking about how those might connect in on a more ongoing basis. Community assemblies at a board, at a borough, ward or district or neighborhood level, and also the permanent kind of citywide assemblies at the city scale. So for example, around, you know, having a systemic process in place every time there's the renewal of a city's 10-year plan, for example. And in that proposal, we thought not just about these assemblies, but what is that relationship with this wider ecosystem of actors that are involved? We're not talking here at all about trying to replace elections or replace elected officials or replace anything, but really about expanding this architecture of democracy and rethinking about how could we be changing the relationships between citizens as community members with public authorities, elected officials, urban planners, civil society, but also with the wider participatory processes that typically take place and are also adding a lot of value with engaging a wider group of people, you know, such as yourselves at the City Club, and making sure there's really a connection and a relationship between all of them. And this kind of broader, systemic, holistic approach is really kind of infused into the ethos of how we're working around things at Democracy Next and the spirit with which we bring a collaboration into the thinking around the design of a hopefully eventual Bend Citizens Assembly as well. So thank you very much. I'm really sorry that I can't be there in person with you to also have a conversation, but I trust that my fellow panelists will be able to, you know, also provide you with a lot of inspiration and answer the questions you have. And I would be very happy to connect otherwise by email or Zoom or in person the next time that I do come to Bend, which will happen later this year. So thank you very much and see you soon.
lot of information coming your way in a short period of time there, and I realize that it may have been a little difficult in the back to see that, so we'll make sure that we make that slide presentation accessible and available to everyone along the way. You know, one of the key takeaways that I took, I've seen that video and heard her presentation a couple of times, and as we look at the question of why are we looking to do this in Bend, what really caught my ear was her comment that suits aren't required, and I feel this pretty much fits into the Bend ethos. So, what I want to do is give just a little bit of a brief idea of who we are, the Central Oregon Civic Action Project, how this sort of came to be as a Central Oregon and Bend-focused entity and project, and then where we're going next. As you can see by some of the logos there, we're very, the COCAP, as we're calling it, that sort of overlapped there, that didn't make the, that's not the actual logo. And this is also why we don't have a website yet. I've had a lot of questions on when we're gonna get a website up. It's in construction, but fortunately that's not me doing it, as you can see. The COCAP is really a partnership of some very, very talented and experienced organizations that have been in this space for a long time and are helping build civic engagement here in the local area. And of course, we've got that global perspective from DemNext and Claudia. We've got also a very local and regional partner in Healthy Democracy. You'll be hearing from one of their co-directors here today as well. They've been at the forefront, really, of leading these type of assemblies in Oregon and beyond in the U.S. And you've heard already that we haven't had as many here as there have been in the rest of the world. Another core partner is OSU Cascades, their laboratory for the American Conversation. Elizabeth Marino, who many of you know, would have loved to have been here today. She's off on travel, but they are really lending their expertise on how we talk to one another. They'll be doing a bit of research on the efficacy of these programs, but a very important partner there as well. And then when we get into our collaborative partners, it's critical, absolutely, as a prerequisite before we do anything like a citizens assembly, that we've got the buy-in from local government. And we've been very fortunate along the way to have very strong advocates in the city council, county commission, here in Bend, but then we're also going out to our neighboring communities in Redmond and Sisters, and I know some community leaders are here from there, and I've been waiting for this moment to reach out and get to know you, so I can't wait to do that as well. And then the COIC, another core partner, the Central Oregon Intergovernmental Council. And then beyond that, innumerable community organizations who will be core to really bringing the community together to understand what we're doing to ensure that the community wants to be involved and sees this as valuable. And this is where all of you come in as partners. Once you've heard everything that we're talking about, hopefully you'll become evangelists and ambassadors too. And then of course donors. We've been very fortunate to get some catalyst funding. This is not publicly funded right now. We hope in the future that it will be a public-private partnership. Because this is so new and kind of an experiment in the United States, we've got the attention of local organizations, of national level and global organizations. We've gotten some catalyst funding from the Rockefeller Foundation, Omidyar Network, and others. That's been very helpful. In addition, some very generous funding from local family foundations and dozens of individual donors, Brooks Resources and others here in the community. We're talking with other foundations across the state and locally as well. How we got here, just over a year ago, Claudia was here at OSU Cascades at the Laboratory for American Conversation for a conference on information quality, and she gave a presentation that was very similar to that, a bit more detailed and involved, and it really caught everyone's attention. We have been since sort of, this is that seed that she helped plant has been growing and growing. We've had, as I said, strong advocates. Anthony Broadman, I think, is here, who's been really helpful in helping to broaden the awareness of assemblies and what we can do in the community. We've been talking with countless groups about what topics we might get involved in. And I personally, you may not know me because I just moved here in August. I retired from the military, and then my wife retired from the military last summer. It was our first chance as adult human beings to choose where we wanted to live, and this was the spot. So, but we didn't come here just to do this. We came here because we love the community, but now this is an opportunity to really help get involved and create something meaningful and long-lasting. As we look at how we chose Bend as and Central Oregon as sort of the focal point and why national interests are involved, it really is because Central Oregon, and if you will, Highway 97, as we all know, is sort of a symbolic and physical dividing point. As you move from the lush green of Western Oregon out to the brown, as you move from blue to red, from urban to rural, all of those divisions that exist across the country really sort of come together here. And of course, as one of the fastest growing regions and communities in the country, we're also experiencing a lot of the challenges that come with that, with affordable housing, with income disparities, and communities that feel at times as if their interests aren't being paid attention to as much as others. And that's really what lies at the core of a citizens' assembly, is offering everyone a seat at the table. Those people who feel as if their voices aren't heard have an opportunity to actually get involved. Now, Bend and Central Oregon, as I've found, and as you demonstrate here today, is already a very civically engaged community. And we have that advantage that there's some energy and a spark. But we all know that we here represent only a tiny percentage of the community, and there are so many people who don't have the opportunities to get involved. And now this is the opportunity to give people who aren't stakeholders, who don't have the time and resources to be involved on committees or to come and learn more, to actually energize them to be able to get civically involved. And in the end, our vision is just that we have used this civic engagement to form and help shape a more vibrant and inclusive community where everyone has a seat at the table and is empowered to participate and have their hand in policy and governance that will be meaningful in their lives. And also, that comes with it our real objectives, which are, yes, building a civic engagement hub that is not just about citizens' assemblies, but it's a lasting, sustainable thing in the community that helps bring people together in other ways as well. And we want to be creative and imaginative and let people have their hand. The real sort of short-term objectives for an assembly that we would like to and we're planning to hold with the key implementation of healthy democracy at the core will be this fall in September and October. We think it's really important to show the community, but also the country, that things like this can happen even in the midst of what probably will prove to be a bit of a nasty campaign season in some ways. And so building that civic engagement, helping to rebuild faith in institutions, people who maybe don't, we're at an all-time low of faith in government institutions in the country at the national to the local levels. Also helping to bridge these social divides through conversation. There are some great stories that I would love to share when we have a bit more time about people coming together in these forums. Our assembly is looking at 7 days over the course of 2 months. So people will come together from broadly disparate backgrounds and be able to sit together and actually learn about one another. And what we've seen time and again, empirically, anecdotally, is that people who would never in a million years talk to one another on the street, maybe their only interaction is in a comment section of a Facebook post, suddenly have the time to sit, listen to people's lived experiences, learn about one another, and actually change their opinions, potentially, of the other person. But if nothing else, gain some empathy and be able to spend time with one another, understand problems, and look at realistic community-level solutions. And I think the key here also is just, I've mentioned it a couple times, this is not a one-off event. We're talking with our elected officials and members of local administrations about this becoming a lasting public-private partnership with funding from both sides so that we can actually bring people together routinely to do these again and again and again. Once again, I'll get that website out to you and the slide deck once our team has built them. But really appreciate everyone being here today, and I want to stop there so we can get to go here on our panel. Thank you.
I'm sure you have some questions, so let's get our panel discussion going and welcome our panelists. So, see where they're gonna end up here. Here toward the middle, I have Alex Ranieri. She co-leads a program development and process design at Healthy Democracy, a US-based nonprofit, nonpartisan, that brings together everyday people selected by democratic lottery to tackle tough policy questions. Sounds familiar, right? She co-coordinates their complex public processes and manages partnerships with deliberative democracy practitioners in the US and abroad. Welcome, Alex. And then some of you may know the person on the end, Megan Perkins. She was elected Bend City Councilor in 2020 and is proud to have served as Mayor Pro Tem since 2023. She's a sixth generation Oregonian, and her work has focused on government, nonprofits, and community engagement. She's the proud co-founder of Embrace Bend, a group working for a connected and thriving Bend where equity and access are experienced by all. Welcome, Megan. So we're gonna have a few minutes of questions, kind of covering maybe some of the more common ones that some of you are thinking right now. And then, like I mentioned before, we'll have an opportunity for all of you to ask some questions. So the first one is, how do you create a truly diverse assembly, and how does the lottery work?
Thanks for the question, Nicole, and I'm so happy to be here in Bend this morning. So I think Claudia did a really wonderful job at kind of talking through the mechanics of the lottery, often called democratic lotteries or sortition, lots of words for this. So I want to take a step back and just talk about how unique this is and what a unique niche a lottery process fills in our democratic ecosystem. Most of the public processes that we know are either open by special invitation, so stakeholder engagement, right? You need an interest or a stake in a topic to be invited to the table, kind of like Josh was talking about, or open to anyone. So, right, we get the same people volunteering again and again, the usual suspects showing up to public forums, city council meetings, et cetera. So lotteries offer this unique supplemental way of engaging folks in our democracy. In our past processes, often 90% of folks on the assembly have never participated in any kind of government process before. And they don't just work towards a more diverse group, they actually guarantee representation. So we take demographic data from a population, in this case it would be Deschutes County, and then identify targets and criteria for representation based on those targets, and select an assembly that is exactly reflective of that population. And we do that by making it as easy to participate. So once that lottery process has happened, we reach out to people individually, offer one-on-one support, tell them they don't need to wear their suits, really make it an accessible opportunity that sounds inviting, that's fostering belonging and a sense of ownership, and remove those practical barriers to participation as well. So offer stipends, child and elder care support, and really one-on-one direct support throughout the process. And we see really high retention as well. So even in the 7 days that we're planning for this assembly, typically we only see maybe one person drop out. Even in a couple examples in Europe, with 150 assembly members, you see almost 100% retention. So that's what really happens when you give people ownership in the process and get a body that is reflective of the public that has an important job to do.
So. Thanks so much. Another question, how is it different from other civic process or government committees?
I think one of the things that it does is it really helps take the slant out of government or government policy, whether real or perceived. How do we learn about information? We learn about information in a bubble, whether it's our friends, our social media, our church, our family, and government works in a bubble. And we have done an increasingly incredible job of reaching out to our community, whether it's town halls or you know, community events. But no matter what we do, like you just said, we still hear from basically the same 25 people over and over and over. And it's really hard for me as a city councilor to understand how a majority of the people feel about something and what solutions they have without putting absolutely everything to a vote. And I think this is a really excellent way of popping that bubble.
I'm being reminded of our letters to the editor. It is like 25 of the same people. So it's okay. You write me a letter. I love it. Another question. How are local governments held accountable to the recommendations made by the assembly, and who ensures the recommendations move forward?
I'll start off there. As I mentioned in my comments, there is an imperative that before we even get started, that we've got buy-in from local government that says they'll endorse but stay separate from the process, because we're trying to rebuild that trust. They shouldn't be directly involved in the implementation. But very importantly, before we get started, and in fact, we're negotiating right now with the city and the county, and we'll be out in our neighboring jurisdictions to have formal MOUs signed that say at the end of the assembly, it's critical that they receive the recommendations from the assembly, that after deliberation we hand over the recommendations, and importantly that they will publicly debate and report back on whether or not they will implement and why. That really sort of brings it full circle and gives that agency to the people who have been involved.
That's kind of a fascinating topic, just to veer off for a second. Maybe Megan, you have a little perspective on this. You have committees in the city who make recommendations that then the council then votes on, and sometimes occasionally votes the opposite of the committee. So, what are your thoughts about this kind of locked in thing that Josh is suggesting?
Well, I don't know if I'd use locked in as a term, right. But I mean, I think that what the MOU is going to say is one, you know, one of the things that our council goals say that we want more accessible government, we want more innovative ways of engaging with our public. And second, that we will not only hear the recommendations, but really evaluate them and see how we can apply them to our work. And third, I think we're really excited about the potential of a sustainable process. I mean, we have a lot of big problems in our community and big things that we need our community's help in solving. And so I think that that's what we're looking to do with our MOU.
Great.
Can I add one piece there, Nicole?
Go ahead, yeah.
Just want to highlight, too, that across the world, assemblies' recommendations are implemented at a very high rate. So in about two-thirds of the over 700 cases we've seen globally, over half of the assembly's recommendations have been actually adopted by authorities. So an important piece here is that it's not just any old recommendation coming from one interest group. It's actually a group that's deliberated and taken the time to come up with supermajority recommendations that are helping do government's job for them in a way, right, and make it really easy to implement. That's the goal.
Yeah, that's a fascinating element of this conversation for sure. There's a lot of distrust in government these days. How do you engage people who are distrustful of the process and include their voices and perspectives?
These type of public fora are critical. Also, just good old-fashioned getting out into the community, talking with different groups. That's part of my role as the local stakeholder sort of engagement person, if you will. I think I've met with, a couple hundred individuals and groups so far, and we're going to continue to increase the pace of that to ensure that both when people get something in the mail, that they know what they're getting and understand and want to volunteer and participate, but then also more importantly that everyone in the community understands what's happening and the benefits that are coming out of it in the long term.
Yeah, and I think speaking from the process designer and implementer perspective at Healthy Democracy, we're a practitioner organization, so we're the folks in the room kind of having to answer for the process. And really how we see our role is, you know, it's our job to earn the trust of the folks who participate. So a lot of folks do, you know, because we're selecting this cross-section of the population, including ideological diversity. Some folks do come in with, you know, quite a lot of distrust for a multitude of reasons, and it's our job to really prove through our process design that we, you know, are designing the process in such a way where we're not influencing the content. We haven't allowed any other entity to have, you know, too much framing power or influence over the policy topic or the deliberation. And what we see time and time again is that once people actually go through the process, even if they come in pretty distrustful of policymaking in general or us, or think it's, you know, the city is kind of our puppeteers behind the scenes, which often happens, we earn that trust through these hours and hours of saying, no, you're in the seat of power. It's actually your process. We're just here to support you. So, yeah.
Great. I know this is probably one that everyone is wondering. How are topics chosen? And what is the first topic chosen?
Do you want to get started on that, or Alex? I don't know. Yeah, I think very critically here, we've been, as I mentioned numerous times now, engaged across the community now for months. And we've really canvassed opinions on what challenges are. And we've had ideas on everything from opioid crisis to mental health, childcare, affordable housing. And all of those, of course, are critical. In some cases, you'll see assemblies that focus much more narrowly on, you know, what do we do about the mirror pond, for instance, which I know is a
That's not
topic
narrow,
of,
Josh.
All right, my fault. We put a stop sign at the intersection. In any case, very important to get the community broadly involved, and ideally actually having some sort of formal polling or opportunity for people to get involved. In this case, we found a topic that resonates with just about everyone we've spoken with, and that's the challenge of youth homelessness across the region, and that's going to be the topic of our first assembly this fall. We believe it's something that is both vitally important to get our arms around. There have been, of course, many things that have been done and are being done, but this helps the community to get involved, have raised some awareness, and also have a hand in prioritizing solutions.
Yeah, I think certainly that topic will perk the ears of many individuals in our community. So we are going to move now to some questions from the audience. Amy and Elaine are out here. You see them holding the microphone. They will hold the microphone while you ask your question, so you can raise your hand to ask one. Let's try to keep the questions brief and avoid statements. We want to get you all out of here on time, so if you have a legitimate question, please raise your hand.
Hi there. Okay. Can you hear me?
We did it.
I was just saying I'm a high school history and government, so civics teacher by training. And I've found in the classroom that young people are maybe some of the most distrustful of institutions and government. So I'm wondering what track record there's been so far in getting young people involved in these kinds of assemblies, and what plans maybe we have here in the city of Bend to include young people, especially given the nature of the first topic.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. So typically in all the processes that Healthy Democracy has run in recent years, we select from 16 and up. So we have 16, 17, 18-year-olds in the room in our assemblies who are often, I think it's a really interesting point that they can come in with some unique skepticism or healthy critique, right? And often they end up the people running the group group discussions, you know, like they're the ones taking the best notes and really helping guide people through a robust process, so they're always champions.
And I'll say here locally, we're talking with, I'd love to talk with you more about this, but that's part of the reason for getting OSU Cascades, COCC involved, talking with Amy Sabadini, Marcus LeGrand, those who do some very formal and informal civics engagement with students from K through 12. And part of our partnership with OSU Cascades is we'll be bringing in students to help with the moderation on the actual event. We want to be a catalyst for capacity building more broadly for young people. And finally, you're sitting right behind Eliza Wilson, who is a vital partner for us on this topic. Many of you may be aware that COIC was awarded a grant from HUD last year to look at the challenge of youth, unsheltered youth, and there's a youth action board built of young people with lived experience who will be basically reporting to them. We want to ensure that they have a very strong agency in how we run this process and then how the recommendations come back to the community.
Great. Another question?
Hey, Kellen Klein with Citizens for Community and Sisters. I'm stoked on this idea and really curious about capacity for implementation. We're a small town, which seems like something like this could be really valuable in democratizing solutions. But on the other hand, we have like 18 city staff members, you know, funding budgets are tight. How do you see the applicability of this to smaller communities, and what would that look like in terms of building capacity for a program like this, funding it? Do we just have to get Piero Midiar to somehow come to Sisters? Like, how does that work?
Great idea. Maybe I'll hand it over to you in a sec, Megan. But I think core to ensuring that it's something sustainable is that we work in the budget cycle of our local governments, and that we find those niche places where both public engagement and policy formulation and implementations, that nexus, COIC, is a critical part of that. We believe that could potentially in the future, and I don't want to put words in Tammy Bainey's mouth, I think she was here for a little bit, but we look forward to finding a way to have a sustainable public and philanthropic funding for this. And you know, the budget that we're raising for this one right now, you know, may or may not sound like a lot to you, $350,000 to run 50 people panel for 7 days, which includes everything from the mailing to the design and then the implementation. Once we have that running at the broader Central Oregon level, we're looking at that being less expensive because we'll already have a secretariat in place, we'll have the playbook set, but we'll also be reaching out to broader parts of the community. Ideally, we have all three counties and Warm Springs involved. That's sort of the vision for a couple of years from now as we build this civic muscle.
Yeah, and I'd just like to say that I think that this is a real opportunity for not just the city or not just the county to be involved in a really significant issue. You know, government is divided, to use my middle schooler's words, government is literally divided. It is divided into, you know, we have when people come to us and ask us questions about homelessness, is it the city of Bend? Do we help establish shelters? If it's a behavioral health issue, is it the county? If there are, you know, there are over 600 kids in Deschutes County schools that are homeless, you know, so it is the schools. If there are homeless people sleeping in parks, it is the parks. And so I think this is a real opportunity to take a really above ground view of a really significant issue and to learn how each one of us plays a part in it and each one of us is responsible for helping solve it.
Thanks, everybody.
Hi, Tammy, CYC. Whoops, sorry. Is that working? Okay, how about now?
Okay. Okay.
Say thank you, Josh, for calling out COIC. And yes, we yet to be determined, but it's an important bubble to burst and make sure that we are involved. So just wanted to put that on the record. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, great.
Hi, my name is Leslie. I'd like a little more granularity on your metadata for the sorting hat. Where are you getting the names to send the letters to individuals in Bend or the region for these different topics? Specifically, you know, Bend has a second home community. Are people that don't necessarily vote in the region excluded from the sorting hat? Sorry, I'm using a Harry Potter term. you know, how does that actually work? Because I kind of feel like, you know, when we're voting for Megan and other people in the community, we know where we stand in the community, but are you broadening those parameters to include others that are harder to reach, say, the homeless community? You mentioned 16-year-olds. How are you getting to that point where those individuals are actually going to be part of the process?
Yeah, fantastic questions. Thank you. So first of all, yeah, super important to name that even when we use the word citizen, we're not talking about legal citizenship. Often we veer away from the word citizen because it can have that connotation, but pretty much across the board internationally, these processes are open to non-citizens, any citizenship status, so really just residents of the county. And the way that we get those addresses, or you know, who receives the invitation mailer, is typically by working with the GIS department, so in this case with the county, who typically have, you know, address data from across their jurisdiction, and use a sorting system to randomize from that list who will receive the invitation mailing. And it goes to residential addresses, so that's how we capture that, you know, whole 16-plus population, is that anybody from that household that receives the invitation can respond. Typically, we'll only select one person from each household, but it's open to anybody who wants to throw their something in the sorting hat, like the sorting hat. and I'm trying to remember if there were any other aspects of that question. Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's a super important piece, especially for this topic. So in the past, we've partnered with social service agencies to distribute some, we call them golden tickets. So for folks who don't have a residential address, who wouldn't otherwise receive the mailing, the same invitation packet are distributed to folks who are working with those service agencies. And they have a shot to throw their hat in the ring as well. To be selected in the lottery. And typically our housing demographic category will be broken up into folks who own their homes, folks who rent, and folks who are unhoused. So that's actually a demographic that we're selecting for.
Amazing. Let's take one more question.
I think I finally got it.
Two more questions.
Mine is short. My name is Scott Nelson, St. Charles Health System. And my question is around psychological safety for the assembly members. How do you maintain professionalism, respect, compassion when maybe you have really strong opposing and emotional sides? Thank
you. Yeah, another fantastic question. So typically, and one thing that's really unique about deliberative process is that we spend a good, you know, day at the beginning, day to 2 days, doing kind of onboarding activities that help folks, you know, learn about different communication styles, learn how to collaborate with folks across difference, right? It's not just showing up to a meeting and speaking your mind, but there are actually exercises we do that help skill folks up in how to collaborate effectively, especially, you know, we talk about cognitive biases, we talk about how privilege and power operate in group spaces. I think for this one, we'll definitely want some, you know, training on trauma, given this topic area, and how to deal with really sensitive issues, especially when interacting with folks with lived experience in this area. So they do all of that and then hear from dozens of different stakeholders before ever deliberating about the topic. So there's really this encouragement to get curious, you know, think about how we do work with others before diving in and making decisions together.
Thanks, Alex. Let's do one more.
Patrick Howard, City Club member. Is there anything in the process that tries to strive for political viewpoint diversity?
Yeah, well, I mean, We're still working on the design and what those exact parameters are for demographic sortition after the random responses come back. Typically, if we're looking at randomness, obviously statistics are not our friends, because if it's random, all of you could be the only ones who get the actual notes. So we do need to be very conscious of those divisions as we're doing our design, and we'll probably use political affiliation as one of the factors.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the idea for the project. Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
And actually, one last point on there,
sure,
before we go. I think it was mentioned that we look for a supermajority consensus before making a recommendation formal. And part of that also overcomes some of the parity. If we've got a roughly 50-50 division on any of those demographic factors, having that 75 or 80% hurdle that they have to get over for consensus ensures that people are actually coming off of their firm positions and agreeing that something is beneficial for the community as a whole, and they're able to kind of make some changes on their opinions of how things should be done.
Great. Well, thanks, everybody. This has been a great conversation. I think we've all learned some things. And now I want to introduce Kim Gammond, Executive Director of City Club.
Thanks, Danny. Danny, if we could go ahead and get that link up. Oh, it's not coming up. Okay. So after the forum, we're going to send you a link where you can submit topic ideas for future. Oh, there it is. So it is a minty.com link, and that is the number once you're on there that you can enter to submit ideas for future citizens' assemblies anywhere in Central Oregon. Luckily, this was a nice, simple topic with no moving parts that we were able to clearly explain in an hour, so you'll never want to ask them any more questions, right? But this is an exciting topic to consider for City Club, just in the idea of civic participation that is at the heart of our mission. So go ahead and submit topics. This will also go out in the post-forum survey, and then you'll have also the opportunity to do some voting on which topics you'd like them to consider next. Thank you to Nicole, Claudia, Josh, and Alex, and Megan for leading us in conversation today. Our next City Club forum will be somewhat related to the assembly that will occur in the fall, but foster care beyond the headlines, what child welfare actually looks like in Central Oregon. And this is gonna take place on May 16th. This will be a traditional lunch topic here at the Unitarian Fellowship. And membership registration for that topic is now open, and non-membership registration will open next week. As you can see on your table, we are currently running a membership drive, and any member that refers a new member will receive a free forum pass for a forum, and then any new member also until May 31st will receive their first forum for free. While members receive discounts on attendance, the real value of your membership is supporting conversations like the one we've had today and the ones we've had earlier this year and in the future. Whether you attend one forum over the year, or whether you just watch them online, or whether you're just passionate about dialogue, civic engagement, and education, we hope you consider either joining, increasing your membership up a level, being a sponsor, or making a contribution. Thank you so much for helping make programming and access for our community possible. Have a good morning.